Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. We've been doing this awards trail, I guess you call it, for a while.
We've been traveling, too,
we
by the
sure
way.
We sure have been traveling. And we just got back from Melbourne, Australia. Well, from Australia, Tasmania, Melbourne, and Sydney. And attended the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival and the World's 50 Best. And we have interviews today and oncoming shows.
Yeah, week after week. We met a lot of really fascinating people that we need to bring to you because each of them has a fascinating story to tell. But before that,
we're about to turn around and go to another big awards thing for us, and it's the James Beard Foundation's awards of best chefs and restaurants, which is what we're dealing with, in Chicago, May 1, and we received the list of the finalists.
By the way, I'm sure you can still get a ticket.
So
go to jamesbeardfoundation.org, I think, isn't
yes.
it? Yes. And
jamesbeard.org.
If you do that, we'll see you there.
It's jamesbeard.org.
It's an expensive ticket, but it's well worth the money.
Yes.
Because everybody in the U.S.
is
there.
It's trite now, but I need to say it because it puts it all in perspective that it's called the Oscars of the food world, and everybody's all turned out for this event. And it's a very exciting thing, as we will tell you, for the people who are involved in it. We're going to be bringing you interviews with two of the finalist chefs today. Two people the one is a really old friend, and I'm really fascinated with the other one, Nina Compton. The first one is Michael Tusk, who we've known for a gazillion years.
Of Quinn's Restaurant in San Francisco.
Exactly. We'll find out. And during the interview, we'll talk about that. Well, I mean, talk about Old Home Week, talking to Michael Tusk. We couldn't remember how long ago it was that we met, having dinner at the Modern, what was it called, the restaurant, the Modern?
It was called the Modern.
The Modern, right.
And it was at the Modern.
And that was the year that Gabriel won Best New Chef. And you were having dinner with your wife at the same time.
Lunch.
With your wife at the same time. And we connected. But we can't remember how many years ago it was. It was a long time.
It was a long time ago. But maybe next time we see Gabriel, we can ask him.
Yeah, he probably has a better memory. Yeah.
He would remember.
Right.
I think he would remember. We interviewed him at 2 o'clock in the morning at the after party, and I said, "Did you call your mother yet?" He said, "Yes," and she didn't believe me.
But you've made such progress. Oh, the other thing, and when we scheduled you for the interview, I just quickly checked out your bio again because I hadn't talked to you in such a while, and I had forgotten that you were part of our little food group that had studied art history. You know, you got a degree in art history. Ruth Reichel and I both got masters in art history from the University of Michigan. And then there's some other people too. There's a whole group of art historians that became either food writers or chefs. So there must be. Go ahead.
It's a degree to have if you're going to get into the food world. It's art history.
It's good to be able to get into something after you get a degree in art history.
Yeah, it's the one that precedes. Would you like fries with that, sir?
So now, Michael, you are the chef owner of Quinn's and Catania.
Catania.
Catania. All right, that makes more sense because I read something that says that it's Italian for Quinn's, Catania.
Exactly.
It is. Yep. Okay.
And Catania is in Portland, Oregon. So
that's right. You don't want to confuse that. No.
Yeah, don't want to take away from his fine work that
he's excellent too.
Well, now let's just make sure listeners understand why we invited this illustrious gentleman to be on the program in particular.
Can I just say, by the way, that we've eaten at both of his restaurants and he's fabulous.
Yeah, I think we ate at both his restaurants on the same trip to San Francisco.
You're being way too kind.
With the big green oven.
Yep, that's still there. Same part of the oven, you know, kind of rotisserie grill from outside of Florence.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's kind of a workhorse. It's almost 8 years old. Been trying to do some touch-up on the green. I think when you saw it, the green on the outside was a lot brighter. It's kind of taking
It looked like new. I still remember the interview we did with you and David Lynch when you were sparring over what wines we had with what we ate.
Yeah.
That was a fun time period. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Do you still have is that fabulous server still there?
God, there's a lot of them.
There was one particular person who always seemed to take charge of us. At your first place and then at the second one. I can't remember her name.
I can't remember who exactly that would be, but we still have some original members from when we opened up on Bush and Octavia. We still have Juan and Eduardo. They've been with us for almost 14 years and some other folks. But, they kind of come and go. There's a lot of... some move on to other careers and some move on to other restaurants and so forth. But that was a fun time period that I remember well when you visited and meeting you at the Modern and you'll have to get to Jeff Kreiser's new restaurant. Did an event with him recently. So, I went there for some small bites in the salon area, but I wasn't able to do a full meal. So my next trip back to New York, it's on the top of my list. And I did an event with him for Gourmet Fest in Carmel last month with Gabrielle and Danielle and Chef Justin Cogley from L'Aubergine.
Right. We met him when we were on a fam trip to Carmel by the Sea.
He's good too. It was a great meal.
No, it was the guy.
He said
you have to come back for dinner. We said, well, we have plans for dinner already. He said, you have to come back for dinner. so he made I think there was truffle in everything we had.
I think so. it was a full meal.
And we didn't care about the dinner afterwards because his food was so good.
Now, what Peter started to say is why we are talking to you on this particular occasion, and that's because you are a finalist for Outstanding Restaurant by the James Beard Foundation Awards. And I'm looking at this list, and your Quince is on the list. But did you look over the competition?
I saw briefly, and usually when it was a great group of other restaurants, and you know, at the end of the day, it's not about who wins, it's just about being in that company with those other great spots around the country. So I like all the other places, so you know, it's just an honor to be on that particular list.
Amazing.
You know, teamwork, you know, running a restaurant. So I like it that it's a restaurant award, not an individual award. And everybody is, from the restaurant is excited that, you know, we made it onto that list. So whatever happens, it's just more about getting together and seeing other, friends and meeting new chefs and restaurateurs and, you know, mixologists and, you know, folks in the, you know, just about seeing everybody rather than, you know, who wins is pretty secondary to all that other stuff.
Well, we're waving a magic wand anyway. And here's an interesting question for you. You got
sure.
you, you got three very well-earned, I might say, Michelin stars from in the Michelin Guide for 2017 for California.
Just 16.
How does it? How, no, I looked it up on the internet before I stuck my foot in it on the air.
Okay, all right.
doesn't mean I'm right, but I remember it was 2017. How does it compare?
Oh, you know, just it was just great for, you know, the staff, the core clientele that's been visiting us, you know, from when we were a little neighborhood restaurant across town for the first, you know, almost seven years that we were open. It's about you know, everybody's involvement that supported us along the way. So change is just you know, I just come to work and I work hard, try to motivate the staff and really work even harder, just make you push even more with the recognition. You get some, you know, guests that may make that special trip just to come see you from somewhere around the world. So that's exciting that somebody has made a special journey just to spend the night at the restaurant and dine with us. Yeah, it's great. It's a, you know, special accomplishment, and we try to do our best to really have the guest that does make that journey or guests that are from the Bay Area, you know, just have an exciting dinner and really show them what we do and how the restaurant has kind of evolved over.
Yeah, how has it evolved? I mean, what's different now?
I'd say the biggest thing
is,
well, when we opened up 14 years ago, it was a lot of a la carte dishes. We've got, you know, we still cook for anybody who wants us to just, like, kind of go off-road and just do a meal for them. We sometimes sit folks in the kitchen, two people, you know, for a service if they'd like, which is similar to what we had at the old restaurant when we had a kitchen in the pastry department in the basement.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
So that's like a throwback to the old time period, but a lot's changed both, you know, in the world. Personally, just the biggest thing is working with Peter Martinelli from Fresh Run Farms in Bolinas. That's like a collaboration where we work with him solely, and everything that he grows is for the restaurant. And just being able to, you know, I was at the farm twice this week. Uh-huh. I was there on Wednesday. We had the largest amount of rainfall, I think, in 123 years in Bolinas, where the farm is located. That collaboration, though, was unique in that as a farmer, he's doing three deliveries a week in peak season. He's placing sales calls, not really being able to farm the land as much. So we kind of got together through some friends in common that are special folks, Evan and Madeline Shively. They're in Marshall, and, you know, they just suggested, like, that we collaborate. So now the farm, we meet about what we're going to grow per season. He had a three-year, you know, the drought that we had in California was pretty awful. So he was down to about, like, 6 months because he was, you know, there's a creek running through the farm. He was using that for his water source in the
Good
state
grief.
Of California. Put in a well after 20 years of trying to get that accomplished. He's got a new lease on life, and now we're planning over 40 to 60 different items. That's really special. We go up for plantings with the staff, whether it's potato or garlic. We've got a crop manager who organizes deliveries for us. That's a super young, talented woman named Emily Winfield. And then it's just a different, you know, we've got the wild products also that we could forage since the farm. We planted about 20 to 25 acres, which is amount of land, and we've got a fruit orchard and we're working on both the perennials and the annuals on the property. So, but the idea really behind it is education for our staff and even some of our guests that want to come up to, you know, to the farm events. Peter just built a 20 by 60 foot greenhouse.
Wow.
I saw something when I was in Stockholm last year, which is an amazing, beautiful city with great, really fabulous food. Some of the restaurants that I had in Stockholm were super inspirational. I went to this garden outside, like, Stockholm, and they had just these greenhouses where parties were dining inside the greenhouse. The coastal climate is fairly tough in, you know, the winter months, so we made a real effort to get the greenhouse built so that we can have more products around and get things in the ground sooner, but also to have these meals inside the greenhouse. So once the weather dries up and we get a lot more of our plantings in, we're going to be doing some meals where we'll be cooking directly from the farm and foraging from the natural landscape there. So it's inspirational to see where the products are coming from, how they're grown. It's like a new lease on life for both of us. He doesn't have to drive, spend 3 days,
right,
you know, for five or so months driving around to, and then we basically get all the, everything that's grown. And if I want to, I could, you know, I wanted to have a little farmer's market in front of the restaurant.
Oh, really?
Didn't work out last year, but, you know, a close circle of friends that I really don't want to be driving around San Francisco, but, you know, they can pick up at the restaurant if I have extra product. We can pickle a lot of items. We can sell a lot of items. So it's just a totally different dynamic, and I enjoy it more dealing with, you know, one farmer, building up that relationship, figuring out what grows from year to year. And, you know, if I go travel somewhere and I see something that I want grown, you know, he gives me an honest answer on whether it can be grown with this climate, coastal climate. And then it was originally a big artichoke growing area, that particular farm. So I got our first, like, 12 artichokes yesterday. They're one of the few items besides, you know, wild nettles, garlic, and leeks right now that kind of made it through the intense rainy season. So, but we look back to history and what historically grew in that climate. And he's a very smart farmer. When Prince Charles came to visit the Bay Area for his tour a number of years back of organic farms, he visited Peter at Fresh Run Farm. So it's a very unique farm and very inspirational. So I'd say that's the biggest inspiration right now, is like taking it a step further. Than it's fun meeting farmers at markets and picking up product, but it's all the little ideas that come out of visiting the farm and planting and taking things like a step further than we were before. So
it's been really super exciting.
So you'll have to come visit.
It is exciting. And, yeah, I mean, we like David Kinch's arrangement with his farm. That was, and we just saw Stone, what's his name from Stone Bars?
Dan Barber from Stone Bars.
Yeah, and that works for them. So it's, you know, I think it's a good thing.
By the way, if you're looking for veal, Dan Barber has a lot of veal.
Yeah.
that's a story for another day. What we must do is we must, first of all, echo the feelings of the beard nominators. Your story, Mike. Truly inspirational. I know you wouldn't say that, but we know it is.
Yes.
And if you want to understand what inspirational looks like, go to the website, click on menu, and look at the pictures, and drool.
Yeah.
and then ask yourself, if you were a voter, who would be the winner in this category?
I appreciate it. Well,
we'll see you in New York.
In Chicago.
That's right. In Chicago.
Excellent. Well, it's always a pleasure speaking to you. I always look forward to.
You know what I've always thought is your name, Tusk, is probably a shortened form. Did one of your relatives come through the Statue of Liberty?
Ellis Island.
Ellis Island site, and somebody who decided that your long Italian name had to be shortened it to Tusk?
Unfortunately, I think it's I've never quite figured it out. Like, I think it's more of a Russian, Eastern European abbreviation that kind of got cut off, and then I just adapted the mantra of trying to, was inspired by my trips to Italy and so forth, so I tried to bring that into the play. But I just had a conversation with my wife yesterday about doing that, you know, one of those DNA kind of, like, figure out your ancestry.
Oh, right, yeah.
That have gotten a lot more advanced than in prior years, so maybe the next time I see you, I'll have more answers for you.
Okay.
regarding the Ellis Island, you know, arrival. So
fabulous to talk to you. We'll see you in
Michael,
Chicago.
Michael, don't forget to check us out in the press room at the Beard Awards.
Excellent. Well, it's always a pleasure speaking to you.
Thanks, yeah, Michael Tusk. Love you dearly, and see you in Chicago.
And we'll be back with another Beard nominee right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, and we go from talking to an old friend of ours to a new acquaintance I just met, Nina Compton, who's up for Best Restaurant, Outstanding Restaurant in the South, from New Orleans, Comprere Lapin, and I'm already a great fan of hers. You're going to hear a lot about her, and Peter just figured out that the name of her restaurant is not just French, but it's Brother Rabbit, but it's Br'er Rabbit from Aesop's Fables, who was just the teller of tales. Anyhow, let's listen to Nina. I'm really excited to be talking to Nina Compton. You know, we called you initially, Nina, so we could talk to you about your James Beard finalist designation. And then in the meantime, you also turned up as one of the best new chefs in the country. Congratulations.
Yes.
On that. That's
Thank you so much.
Yeah, especially it's always this male-dominated thing, you know. And there you are.
Yeah. I think I was pleasantly surprised when I got that phone call. It's still, still hasn't quite set in.
Well, I'm very excited about that, and I'm also excited about your James Beard designation as Best Chef South. And, you know, I wish that more people would pay attention to the areas, because, I mean, some areas, let's face it, there's not as that much competition, but New Orleans, you have a lot of competition going on.
Yes. I think when we saw the list for the semifinals, it was pretty tight, because a lot of these chefs that I know, it is a very tight community here. I think all the chefs know each other, and we always support each other. So when you see that list, it's kind of happy that you have your friends in that same group, you know, and either somebody pushes on. But I think in the grand scheme of things, that we're all happy for each other.
Oh, that's great. Well, it's, I mean, you have an interesting background. Now, you're from the Caribbean?
St. Lucia, yes.
Is it St. Lucia?
St. Lucia, yes.
St. Lucia. Is that how you say it? St. Lucia, huh?
Yeah. We're actually an independent colony now, but we used to be French. Both French and British, and we became independent in 1979.
Oh, that's recent, huh?
Yes.
And what was the cooking style you grew up with?
You saw a lot of French and English influences in the food, as well as Indian and also African cooking growing up. So that's pretty much, it's a big melting pot, kind of like New Orleans. because you see a lot of influences from, you know, slavery, where you had all the Africans that came over and the Portuguese and the Spanish that settled in your, it's the same thing in St. Lucia. You saw a lot of that kind of cooking of using what was available on, you know, on the land. That was definitely used in their cuisine.
Uh-huh. Your restaurant is called Compère Lapin. And of course, yeah, and anything that has rabbit in the name is something we would jump on because that's my husband's nickname is Rabbit, which as he said, we're not going to go into. But anyway, it's sort of a what is Compère Lapin?
It means brother rabbit. Uh-huh. It was a folktale that I grew up with as a child. It means you know, he's a trickster rabbit. But it was one of those books that I was reading about and doing my research about Louisiana. And, you know, I Googled different names of, you know, what I'm going to name the restaurant. And I just Googled, you know, Creole and Patois names, and Compère Lapin popped up.
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh my gosh, this is something that I grew up with. And how can I tie the two in, you know, of me moving here as well?
Yeah, I mean, what a coincidence, huh? It's sort of like it was meant to be.
Yeah.
So, now, tell me a little bit more of your background. I mean, you were immediately in Florida before going to Louisiana, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was in Florida for a very long time. I worked for, you know, chefs like Norman Van Aken.
I love Norman, by the way. He's
great. He's one of my mentors. He was one of the very few chefs, you know, as a young cook that was doing Caribbean, Latin, and, you know, using Floridian, you know, ingredients in his cooking, but at a very high level. So for me to see that, you know, I was 22, 23, you know, at that age, it blew my mind.
Yes.
Because these are the same ingredients I grew up that are very humble ingredients, and he was doing them at, you know, a 5-4-star level. So it was something I'm like, it blew my mind again.
Oh yeah, and yeah, I really adore him. He's so humble too.
He is, and we are still very good friends. You know, after all this time, we still stay in contact.
Oh great! I usually see him at the Beard Awards. I don't know if we'll see them. The awards are, give us the date again.
May 1st in Chicago.
Which is Monday.
She knows you're possibly going to be there, I suppose. Huh?
Yeah, we're looking forward to first time going.
You'll be the one with you'll be the one with the biggest smile on your face. I'll bet. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. When I lose, I'll still be smiling.
Now, who's Larry?
Larry's my husband.
Okay, all right, because we were corresponding with Larry. Okay.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Now, on your website, you have your philosophy of.
Yes.
Yes. And it's really lovely. It says,
Thank you.
The meals aren't about trends, shock value, or opulence. Meals are about moments, memories, and those who surround you at your table. We believe in the complexity of simplicity. Now, that's a beautiful statement, the complexity of simplicity, and the power of pure flavors. Our histories, vast and varied, deserve to be memorialized and romanticized by dishes that at once remind us of home and transport us to somewhere new. We don't make food for everyone else, we make food for you. Now, that's really a beautiful statement.
Thank you.
Did you have to think long and hard about that, or is it just from the heart?
It definitely is one of those things that I try and tell people. You know, the whole premise of the restaurant is, you know, to do food that people can relate to. It's not about, you know, doing deconstructed food, or I want to do food that people crave, like, oh my gosh, you know, I had the curry goat last night, it was so amazing, or I had the marinade shrimp. You know, that reminds me of that time I went to, you know, Peru when I had the ceviche. It's about, you know, striking that nerve of that memory that you had as a child, you went on vacation somewhere and you had this memory. I think a lot of people, you know, I tell my staff also, what we're doing here is we're creating a memory. So when people come here, they leave with a memory, you know, whether it's good or bad. You know, most of the time we aim for the good, of course. But it's, you know, having that thing where people like, oh my gosh, I went to the restaurant and I had the best experience. The service was warm. The food was really good. The music was great. The energy was very, you know, inviting. That's what we're going for here.
Right. And, you know, you've had a lot of experience in competitions. And you,
right.
Yeah, and you were top chef runner-up, right?
Yes.
Now, what was that like, this competitive thing? I often feel women just are at a disadvantage doing that.
I think, you know, during the show, I think going into it, I had a mentality of, you know, I want to win. But, you know, once I started competing, I started looking at it as, you know, this is my one chance to, you know, have fun with it. I think it was extremely stressful on various levels.
Uh-huh.
But I think it challenged me as a chef. I think I became more creative. I think I had more fun, you know, with life.
Oh, that's
because
great.
I was on a different, it was a different environment. I created a lot of friendships. I created some really good food. And I think that was a point in my life where, you know, I look back on it and I'm like, it kind of molded, you know, me to where I am right now.
Right. Now, I picked up your menu off your website at Convert Le Pain, and it really is interesting. There are all kinds of influences in there.
Yes.
Now just run us through some of your favorite items.
Well, the menu is, you know, people say, what is your menu? What is your cuisine? That's very hard to pinpoint. You know, me being from the Caribbean, I try and use ingredients that I grew up with, you know, such as conch. Curry goat is one of those things that you see speckled in every Caribbean menu, but
yeah.
You don't see it everywhere. But I also take influences from Latin cuisines. But I also give a nod to the cooking of Louisiana. So, you know, kind of an example of the dirty rice arancini.
Oh, right.
Dirty rice is something that's very southern, but we add, you know, a sour orange mojo, which is Latin. So we kind of, you know, keep it a very playful menu. We don't take ourselves too serious. You know, we have fun with the menu. We try and keep it as seasonal as possible.
Uh-huh.
But that's just the whole, the beauty of not pigeonholing the restaurant to it's just Caribbean. It's pretty much everything.
And you have good resources and, you know, for your,
yes.
Yeah, and your ingredients there. And, yeah, I mean, we love New Orleans, and we're due to come back at some point soon because we missed it.
Yeah, we'd love to have you in.
Yeah, and we're friends with all the chefs and restaurateurs there. It's really exciting. It's like going home. And, I mean, like, Alain Shaya, we've known him for years.
And yeah, he's great.
Yeah, John Besh. I mean, how many years is that rabbit we've known John Besh?
A long time.
A long time.
Yeah, he's great. They're all great.
They are.
It's so many years, it's a long time. I remember the first year we decided we would go somewhere totally mad for Christmas. We booked a trip to New Orleans five days after we booked it. We had a wonderful time. We went to Luke, one of John Besh's restaurants on Christmas Day. We liked it so much we went back the next day.
Oh, that's funny.
Because you weren't open, otherwise we would have gone to Compère Le Pain.
Right, yeah. Well, we're still open.
We'll hit that for sure.
I saw Donald Link is up for...
Yeah,
Donald
Link. He's another great. He's just, so many great colleagues there.
He's just right down the street from you, right?
Yes, he is. And it's great. I mean, the chef community here is very, very close. I think, you know, when I moved here, a lot of the chefs reach out to me and welcome me to the city. You know, when I moved here, Donald Link took me out to lunch. And I come to, say, let's have some lunch. And I think the people here have been very supportive and very friendly and very open. And again, it just says a lot about the city itself, that people are, you know, very open-minded, very welcoming. You know, I think that's very, very, very important for me and that's why I enjoy living here.
Yes, I like it too.
Well, you get good wishes from us.
Yes, and we'll
thank you.
Sure,
for the 1st of May, we have been known as a lucky charm in the past. But
I need all the luck I can get.
Well, we certainly wish you well. We congratulate you on reaching the semifinals as you have done, as you said earlier. That in and of itself is an enormous
yes.
achievement.
She's a finalist.
Yes. I always get the wording wrong.
I know. Yeah, we just got back from the World's 50 Best in Melbourne.
Oh wow! How was that?
Oh, it's always exciting. But you know, it, with all these programs, it's very hard actually to explain everything. You know that. You know how things judge and where people rank and all that stuff. But
right.
But we always like seeing a lot of our friends and stuff. We get to see.
Of course.
At the Beards, we get to see all the American chefs and restaurateurs.
Right, of course,
and then,
yeah.
And at the 50 Best, we get to see the international.
It's worldwide.
Crew. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So, and the Peruvians were there and the Italians were there and the French were there. So it was really interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So anyhow, I did fall in love with one of the outfits. It's gotten dressier over the years. It used to be that we'd all just show up like the chefs, you know, in blue jeans with a nice jacket.
Oh, how funny.
But now everything's getting fancier, even in the Chicago. But
everything's black tie.
Yeah, but there's a dress that you, too bad you can't pick one of these up along with your award.
It was
black, long sleeve, drop waist with an ostrich feather skirt.
Oh, wow.
You could see through it. Well, best luck to you. And
thank you so much.
And I'm in the press room, so check in with us and say hello, huh?
I will. Yes, and I'll see you in Chicago.
Great. Thank you and much luck.
Okay.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Okay, so having looked forward to Chicago, we're looking back over our shoulder at a wonderful 3 weeks spent in Australia, the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, and the World's 50 Best Restaurants. And starting out in today's program, we wanted to bring you a really exciting new find, a really exciting new talent. The World's 50 Best does a one to watch, which is everybody's favorite restaurant upcoming. Sometimes not in the top 100. In this case, it even made it to the top 100. Edwards Truk and two colleagues who worked together at El Bulli in the glory days of El Bulli launched their new restaurant in Barcelona just a little over a year ago, and they're doing just absolutely great stuff. So here's Edwards Truk talking about the history of that venture. The restaurant's called Disfrateur.
Edward, can't you? I'm not going to try. Edward, you go.
Edward Satruk.
And Edward Satruk was one of the lucky people at last night's World's 50 Best Restaurant Awards, because he already knew he won. In fact, you'd already won twice, right? Because you are the one, to watch, and you also placed in the second 50 restaurants. That must have been pretty exciting to hear that.
We are very happy. For us, it's very important, this award, because it's only just 2 years and a half that we opened Disfrutar, and for the short time that we are open, no, with the restaurant, to have this recognition is very important for the work that we make every day. And that we enjoy with our work, but it's very important that the world, no, the world of the professional world, appreciate the work and the style of kitchen that we are making. So we are very happy.
Now, you got off to what a lot of people would consider to be a good start, working for the totally famous Ferran Adrià at his restaurant, El Bulli. Were you cooking before that, or did your career begin at El Bulli?
I started to work at El Bulli with 17 years. So, and before El Bulli, I work in restaurants, no, in the coast of Tarragona, that it's my village. But very, very simple, no, with paellas, with rice, traditional restaurants. And after, when I arrived at El Bulli, no, my vision of kitchen changed, no. There at El Bulli, I meet Oriol Castro and Mateu Casañas. We were there together during more than 16 years.
Now, those two names you mentioned, say them a little more slowly for those people who are not fluent in Spanish like myself. But listen, just so you get it right, these men were colleagues at El Bulli in the kitchen, and then when it was time to make their own restaurant, they made their restaurant together.
I met Oriol and Mateu there at El Bulli. We were the head chefs during a lot of years, and we work with Ferran like our restaurant. You know, I remember 10 years ago, no. With these hours when El Bulli was open, no, that was the best restaurant in the world. That these prices, no, are very important for our life, no, because there are hours that you feel that is your home, no. And now to be here, no, after living all the experience that we live at El Bulli, it's very exciting because when El Bulli closed, we decided to open a restaurant, a casual restaurant, with very good cuisine, but with not any pretensions, you know, that it's compartint cada ques.
Yes, so that's the restaurant that's called Compartir, and your colleague was saying that's about sharing. So what happens is everybody gets the same thing out of a serving for everybody on the plate, on the table.
In Spain, it's very popular, no, the tapas, no, you know, and tapas are small dishes, no, that you share in the table. So, and what we do in Compartir is that we have a traditional a la carte, you know, with first dishes and second dishes. But what we want is that the customers, no, select the dishes that they want. And they share in the middle of the table. So with this style, no, you can taste a lot of different dishes. No, that is the thing that for us is very important. That it's interesting when you are eating to have a complete experience. You know, because sometimes, no, with two dishes and one dessert, no. It's difficult to have a global vision of a restaurant, no? And if you can taste more elaborations, you can have an idea more general. But, and it's this, no? Compartir means to share in English, in Spanish, excuse me. And what we want is that in cada case, that it's a little village, but very, very nice, no? It's a village of Dalí. It's a very artistic village. It's a village near the sea. It's fantastic, no? Because it's like a village from 100 years ago, you know? Fisherman's village, no?
Yeah, we have been there. It's a really beautiful town, just as you describe it. Now, wasn't there a very famous artist who was born there?
Dalí, Salvador Dalí. Salvador Dalí, no, is an artist that it's no, in all the world. I think that they knows about it. No, it was a person that changed, no, the perception, no, of art, no, in his way, and it's a very important person, no, in the area. And we opened Compartir in 2012. And after running Compartir, no, and we have a great successful, no, that it was very important for us, no, because we are three chefs that all the life was working in a project, no, that was El Bulli, and we were the head chef, but we don't have the responsibility, no, of bad things, you know. And we need to feel, no, what happens if you are the owner. So we start with Comparti. Project for us, very, very important, but with not pretentious about creativity, no, and all of that. That is the kind of kitchen that we have inside, you know. And after 2 years to have open Comparti, we decided to go to Barcelona and open our second restaurant, that is Disfruta. And in Disfruta, we make the kitchen that we dream, you know. We make the kitchen that we feel inside, and we make the kitchen that we are happy with him, that it's a creativity kitchen, no? We enjoy when we make dishes that we see that are different, and there is something new that is nothing done before, you know. When we are able to make a new technique or a new concept, for us this is the most important thing, no? But in Disfruta, we say that maybe we work in two ways, no? One way is a professional way, where we make creativity, no? It's 100 creativity, and we try to make new things, new techniques, new concepts, new products. And by the other side, for the person that comes to a restaurant and maybe is not an expert gourmet, you know, my mother, for example, no? For us, it's very important that all these people go to a restaurant and enjoy food. So, and what it means that you don't need to be a very gourmet person to travel a lot and to go to 100 fine dining restaurants to appreciate our work. The very important thing is that a person that maybe is the first time that goes to a fine dining restaurant, when taste dishes, say, wow, you know. And for us, in a professional way, to make new things is our dream, you know. But in a terrenal way, we work and we make dishes to like the people. And it's for that we put in the restaurant the name of Disfruta. That Disfruta means enjoy. And it's what we pretend at Disfruta. That people that comes enjoy with our kitchen.
Yeah, my wife will probably kill me for this, but she's not here, so she can't kill me just yet. But I think for a lot of people, El Bulli was a great place to go, but it was no fun, because it was all very, very serious. And you're saying, not in Disfrutar, you can have fun too.
No, for me, I don't agree with you with this, because for me, El Bulli was the most exciting and fun restaurant in the world. And I think that before El Bulli, all was different, you know. And after El Bulli, no, but for me, the most important thing of El Bulli is not the new techniques and new concepts and all of that. It's a way to think about kitchen, and that all the chefs, all the professionals of the dining room knows that if you work seriously, you are free. So the very important thing for us is that it's not valid the show, and it's different to have fun or a show, you know. But it's important, and to have fun in food at El Bulli, this is one of the most important thing, you know. But in all times, in a serious way, you know. It's not to make fun if there is not a very, very high level dish, you know. So our work, when you make creativity, I think that you have to think that what you are making is very serious, you know. But you have to pretend that people, that when comes at the restaurant, and what we want when people comes at Disfruta is that they have to be relaxed, no? It's not like go to the church, you know. You have to spend a good time. It's like if you go to an opera, or to see a theater, or a football match. You know, you have to. You don't go to feel angry, no, and to eat something and go out. You are going to this kind of restaurants to live an experience, no. And for us, the fun is important in this experience, but it has to be in a serious way, you know, because food is not a joke for us. Food for us is our job, our passion, and it's the way to transmit to people what we feel. So, it's very serious.
Can you take two things from your menu that you think those are really good, those dishes we're really proud of, and tell our listeners what they are and what they consist of and why you think they're so great?
For us, we always say that maybe the magical things are not in complicated things, no? And it's just the detail, or to make something that maybe all the life you have, no, in front of you, but you don't see, no? And maybe the most emotional things are this. For example, at Disfruta we are making a dessert with a concept that is when the flavor you have in the dish, no, you eat. And when a chef wants to put a flavor in a dish, no, normally you make the sauce or you put in on the product. And at Disfruta there is a dish, no, that I think that represents very well our way to think about kitchen, no? That it's a dessert that we call whiskey tart, okay? That it's the construction of a traditional whiskey tart, that it's a dessert that in Spain were very famous in 30 years ago. It's not a traditional dessert, but 30 years ago you can find in all restaurants, no? And it's a tart with vanilla, hazelnut, egg yolk, no, and whiskey, no, and when the waiter arrives to the dining room, no, they put the whiskey, no, on the tart, and yeah, no, they put, no, in a traditional restaurant, no, they put and you eat, and it's very good, and we like this because you remind, no, when you are little, no, and the father say no, stop, no, to the waiter, stop whiskey, no, you know, is this, and. What we make at Disfruta, we make a dessert, no? But we change all the elements, no? The temperature, the texture, no? It's a candy of hazelnut with oil of hazelnut that it's liquid. After there is a cream of yolk with yuzu and it's crunchy. And just a chantilly with vanilla. And there is no whiskey in the dessert. But when we arrive to the table, the waiter ask for the customer to put the hands together, and we try whiskey like a perfume, and we put a little bit of whiskey in your hands, and it's like a perfume, you know, and you perfume your hands with the whiskey, that is a whiskey with a little bit smoke, you know, and you eat all the elements of the dessert with your hands. So while you are eating the elements, you are smelling the whiskey. And in your mind, you have the taste of whiskey, no? And this is a new way, no, to eat, that for us represent our way to cook, no, that it's not to be it's not just to be different, no, and say no, I put the whiskey in your hands. No, there is a thinking behind, you know, and when you eat, you realize that it's not a nonsense. It's not show, you know. So this is creativity, and this is the difference, no, that with this concept we can make after millions of dishes, no. And there are, for example, another dish, no, that we make with a technique, no, that we make 6 months ago, that is a brioche with caviar and creme fraiche, no. For us, the texture of a brioche, no, a very airy brioche, is magic. No, when you eat, it's no, and when it's hot, no, you know, the bread is magic, no.
Yes.
But if you want to make a feel brioche, you only can put dry nuts, no, or products that, that they can ferment it with all the bread when it's not cooked, no, and they support this temperature and this fermentation, no, and you cannot put caviar inside of a brioche and after ferment and cook. So and with this technique, no, we make a liquid texture of brioche, you know, we put in a siphon, no, and with a spuma we fry at the moment, and we can fill with all the products that we want. So now at this ruta you can go and eat brioche, no, that is make just in 30 seconds. That is hot when you touch. But when you make a bite, you realize that inside there is something fresh, and inside there is caviar. And before, it was impossible that. So now we can make brioche, no? Filling inside, it's not open it and reply, you know? So a piece of brioche, but inside you can find caviar, sea urchin, a sorbet, an ice cream. So, and for us, this is very important because with this technique, we can make millions of different dishes, you know. And for us, this is important. But by the other side, if you don't think about that, no, to say how they make it, if you don't know about kitchen, when you eat, you say, wow, it's very tasty, it's very good. So, for us, this is the important thing.
Anne and Peter were together in Barcelona. We went to a restaurant called Ca Esidra. And we had a dish that was some kind of fishy thing called espardenyas, and no one would tell us exactly what they were. Do you cook espardenyas at Disfrutar?
Yeah, Cal Isidre, it's a restaurant that for us, Mr. Isidre, no, it's a very, very, very nice, first of all, very nice person, and often a very, very professional person, no? Now, he's maybe 60 years, no? And every day he goes to the market to sell the product, so it's a person that is a mirror, no, for us, no? To the constant, no? Every day, every day, every day during so many years. And, yeah, espardenya, it's a product that is typical of the coast of Catalonia, but 20 years ago people don't eat. Just the fishermen, you know, because people don't buy. And the espardenya, it's a kind of sepia, you know, but it's the stomach. And you cut, no, the body is not eaten, no, it's not very interesting, but it's the stomach of this animal. And it has a very light taste, but with very sweet, no? It's a little bit sweet, and you have the yodo of the sea. So the texture is magic, it's crunchy, no? If you cook well, it's crunchy. But there is one thing, one important thing, no? That espardenya is like all the products, no? Because one product you can cook in different ways, and it seems another product totally different. And for example, now, in the menu of this ruta, we have a dish with espardenyas, that we make one a noodle of espardenya, because the espardenya, this stomach, it has a lot of different files put together in a peel, no, that when it's cooked, it's hard. So what we make is that we peel the espardenya, and after with these spaghettis, these natural spaghettis, we make a traditional suquet, that the suquet is a very typical dish in Catalonia, that it's made with fish and potatoes, no? And we make a traditional suquet, but we have the juice of the suquet, okay? And we cook these noodles of espardenya with the suquet. So you eat the espardenya with all his taste in a traditional flavor, but in a new way, and the new way, what is that? We present like noodles, and the noodle is not a pasta, it's a espardenya.
Okay, listeners, you're You're like Ann and Peter. You're saying, nah, how soon can I get there? Can I change my plane ticket to get from Melbourne to the United States via Barcelona? And the answer is, I probably can't do that. But we sure are going to hurry to Barcelona as soon as we can and look up what's happening there, because we just read about Martin Berasategui's third star at his restaurant in Barcelona. I'm sure there's some more exciting things going on there too. But thank you so much, Edouard, for talking to us today. Once again, congratulations on your success here at 50 Best in 2017, the one to watch, and already in the second 50. And I'm guessing your goal is a number slightly less than 50 next year.
No, I don't know. Today we are very happy that what we are making at the restaurant, and I think that you have to work every day for your customers and for your love to the profession, okay? And you don't have to think about hours, because all is a lot relative, you know. The important thing is that all person that comes to a restaurant life a great experience, and is that, and after, if you make that, all is possible. So next year we will see, no, but today we are very happy and we are very proud of the work that we make with all the team.
Okay, so who's going to get there first?
I'm chomping at the bit. I mean, everybody gets so excited.
Anne's totally chomping at the bit.
They do a countdown. First they release the top 151. Then they do, starting with the bottom all the way to the top, when they finally get to number one, and everybody's excited. And then afterwards we party.
Yeah, and sometimes you can catch people to have a chat with you before they win something. Sometimes it's after they win something. And sometimes you can't even get them to talk to you at all. They're so excited. but
we have sound bites.
Here's some real sound bites. Daniel Hume and Will Goddara, who topped the list.
Number one
for 11 Madison Park.
They were over the moon.
Anna Ross, who won from Western Slovenia, won for Best Female Chef. That one had already been announced. A message we felt we needed to include from Gaston Acurio about the tragedy that is now affecting his people
in Peru,
in his home country of Peru, and finally Lars Peter Hedberg, who is one of the conveners, he's head of the whole Nordic region for the voting panel, and he has a wonderful publication called The White Guide. So we're just putting those guys back to back, and we apologize in advance for the background noise. But
it was. How many people were there?
I think about 1,500 people.
1,500.
And 1,500 Australians make a lot of noise.
They weren't all Australians. They were all over the world.
We think perhaps tonight is a night when you like being here even better than being in the kitchen.
Well, I don't know. You know, the kitchen is my favorite place to be, actually. But it's important to step out of the kitchen and to share what we do. And today, to be able to be here in Australia, a place I've never been before, and being recognized as like the world's greatest restaurant, is unbelievable. I can't even put words to it. I don't even know how I feel yet. It hasn't even sunken in yet. But
no, I met your wife talking to somebody else. She said she hasn't even seen you yet.
I know. Yeah. It's about time I can connect with her and with the outside world, you know.
Now,
one thing I want to say is we're very proud that you're an American, even though you're Swiss. But every single winner of this award or in this echelon has had a cause. Sustainability, native ingredients. What are you and Will going to do?
He just asked me to say something, and I need to go call my dad, so I'm going to jump in real quick. How am I feeling?
Yeah.
I'm feeling really good. What we've been working on together for a long time, for it to be recognized like this, there are few feelings that I can imagine being greater. and I'm so happy, and it's even amazing to be talking to you guys. Well, I'm going to run right now, but okay. You've been with us since the beginning, and you guys have been so supportive.
Like, and when he was cursing at the Beard Awards the first time, do you remember?
He said, fuck, all night long. I didn't realize it was a word.
Well done, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Anna Rose, you are the best female restaurant, the best female chef in the world in 2017, and you accidentally became a chef. You're in Slovenia, which most people don't come to. This must be all very strange to you.
Well, it's not very strange. I think I'm actually, you know, the restaurant goes step by step. So we didn't, like, make a big jump. It's a 15 years of work, so it's really a lot of work. So I would say that it was the best possible moment to get an award. So I'm really happy about it.
Well, we're happy about it. My friend, actually, Gita, Chef Gita, told me that she discovered you years ago. You've been cooking under the radar very exquisitely for a long time.
Well, yes, but you know, I come from the countryside, and the countryside is not in the center of the world. So imagine the opinion makers, the journalists, who always travel to the cities. They don't make the effort of going on the countryside. So maybe sometimes the effort of the restaurants that are in the countryside is double than those in the cities. So, of course, you need more time to prepare.
Now, is your restaurant also on the list?
Yes. We are a new entry, and we got on a fantastic 69 position, which is really good because this is, I think, the only restaurant that is managed by a female chef, except Eleanor Zak, who actually works with her father. So it is the highest ranking place with a woman chef, and only woman chef.
Well, Dominique Crenn last year was the best female chef, and her restaurant was not even in the top 100. This year it is, actually. It cracked the 50. I mean, the first 50, the 51 to 100.
But, you know, we shouldn't speak so much about that, because imagine, look at the name of the restaurants that are around us. There are so many great restaurants in the world. And I feel pity to say, oh, you are just the number 69 or 82. That's a great number. There are restaurants with three Michelin stars which are behind us. So we should really be proud of what happened. And even if your restaurant is not on the list or you disappear from the list, this is sometimes mathematics. It is simply how many opinion makers, how many voters, how many journalists are actually coming to your place.
What kind of food do you cook?
I believe that a good kitchen is composed of local ingredients, season, and a lot of personality of the chef. And this is exactly how my food looks like.
We actually tiptoed over the border into Slovenia from Friuli.
Yeah, exactly. We are Kobaridis bordering Friuli, Venezia Giulia, Italy. That's the most northeastern Italian province region, which is pretty unknown but very beautiful. And Slovenia is probably even more strikingly beautiful, so it's really worth the trip.
Do you know the Grobner winemaker?
No, I have no clue. If I know the winemaker.
Grobner?
Joško Grobner is a great friend of our family. He's actually the one who helped my husband's father to make really exceptional wine. He doesn't let a lot of people close by, but I think he always recognizes good people, and I'm really happy I'm on his list.
Well, I want to wish you much success, continuing success,
And you're doing a dinner in Adelaide next?
Oh, yes. I'm coming to Australia pretty soon, so wait for me.
Thank you for talking to us, and congratulations again.
Thank you so much, and all the best.
Well done, Ronnie. You finished, okay? Now?
We're in Melbourne, Australia, and so is Gaston Acurio, but Gaston, your heart is somewhere else right now, I think.
Of course, we are. My heart is now with more than 400,000 fellow Peruvians that are right now, 400,000 suffering of all the problems that we're having with the weather, with the climate, raining, storms, losing their houses, towns completely destroyed, ports, bridges, highways. Right now, in the last days, I was trying to join together the food industry community in the restaurant community, so we could help in anything you can. Stop doing advertising of our restaurants or in everything we normally do. So. Encourage everybody to join all the whole communities that are helping, trying to help. And it's kind of a magical thing happening in Peru at the same time, because we've been discovering this spirit of collaboration of Peruvians that feel that they're part of a family, part of their own country. So we're trying to help everybody, each other. And I think, that will pass. But in the meantime, we need to help a lot. This is the first step, because it's a humanitarian help at this moment. But then it's going to be the toughest part, because it's going to be the reconstruction of all the cities and all the bridges and all the houses. So it's going to be two steps of helping we need. So actually, I'm here also because I'm convincing the best chefs of the world to make an auction dinner. So maybe we can. There's a town in the north of Peru called Catacaos, which is a town that was dedicated all the time. His most important activity was the restaurants, small family restaurants, touristic restaurants, and it's completely destroyed. So maybe that's a place where we can send the help with a huge auction dinner for all 1 or 2,000 people that maybe $1 or $2 million to rebuild the school or rebuild something. So, but we need to understand what's going to happen after the rains stop. Now the rains are continuing, and we need to help. We need to keep helping in a humanitarian way, sending food, sending produce, sending everything people need for an everyday living. No.
Now, I love Lima. I love Peru. You have done so much as a cultural ambassador for Peruvian cuisine and culture. We have never been to your center that was built just as we were leaving Peru.
Tell me
how that's going.
Great. It's a 300 years old house, and that's a place for where we can keep tradition, we can keep our history in this old house restored. But inside we do trying to put on value, creativity, innovation of what we do with what we have in our biodiversity, our cultural heritage in food and cooking. So I for me personally, it's kind of restarting again after 24 years in a new house. I feel like a boy with his new toy. But with, of course, a responsibility to try to do our best every day, no?
Well, I mean, you're a marvel, and I can't wait till things clear up a bit and we can come back to Lima and Peru.
I hope you will come soon, because we miss you.
This is easy, just talk into the microphone.
Okay. You should look into 12 Forward by White Guide, which is pinpointing the 12 restaurants in each world city that stands for innovation in gastronomy, pushing the forefront of gastronomy forward.
Now we should say who this is, because this is a fine dining person that we first met in Lima, Peru in, was it 2013 or 2014? And give us your name just so I can keep it for a reference.
My name is Lars Hedberg. I'm the Nordic chairman of the world's 50 best restaurant.
And do you have any secrets you're going to let out just now?
Yes. No. What secrets do you want to know?
we're anxious to know if our good friend Massimo is going to retain his position or whether the usurper from Switzerland is going to take his place.
Well, it's going to be a very tough fight between the two. That's all I can say.
Now, tell me some more about... Let's go back to what we were talking about to begin with, which is the 12 best...
The 12 forward. The 12... The most innovative restaurants in each world city that pushing the frontier of gastronomy forward. If you want to know where gastronomy is happening, these are the 12 restaurants in each city you have to go to.
Now, for example, let's take a city that's in between us, London.
Okay, let's look. I have to look it up. I have to look it up. Well, of course, that was Tokyo. So let me see now. We have to go back to London. London, there we are. Slow. I would say if we're going to look at someone who is on the list here tonight, it would probably be, let me see here, the Clove Club.
I know this grain store going by.
The chef owner
there is a good friend of ours.
The
Clove Club chef is the most interesting guy here because he's the tallest.
Yeah. So you want to have all the restaurants?
No, this is just an example. This is an example for our listeners.
Yeah, okay.
So what they're going to find.
But that is the most. They would find the Clove Club by themselves, but they would not find the 108 Garage.
But now they will.
Now they will.
Now how do they do that?
Download 12 Forward by Whiteguide from App Store. It's a freemium. Or if you have an Android device, you go to Google Play, and it's all free. The most valuable information in the world for a foodie. It's all free for now.
This fantastic fun to meet you at this crazy event.
Good to meet you too. Take care.
Thank you.
Well, the whole world was there. It wasn't just Australia. The world spotlight was on Melbourne and will be for quite a long time, so everybody was happy.
So tune in again next week for more on the same subject. And until then...
Bye-bye.